So do you have?
Well, so you've done all of this since you've been back, so you've been pretty busy since Vietnam.
Yeah, I actually, you know, today I sit here saying, man, am I tired? I also went and got my homeopathic credentials, and that's, so I've actually had 12 more years of schooling. And I'm a doctoral candidate for acupuncture and medicine, but I'm not going to pursue it. I might try to get something in the line. I'm actually a doctor of divinity, because I felt that my spiritual background, even from tiny, has been driving me to do whatever I'm doing. And I do it from my heart and from whoever, you know, you call your creator. I really feel I'm driven from that source. Mm-hmm. And I feel it's a it's my job here on the earth. So you know, some people I've just talked to, they're retired, and I'm thinking, retired? Is that even in my vocabulary? That would be nice. I'd probably handle it for 2 weeks, but I have to do what I'm here to do. And you know, maybe it'll take me earlier because I'm so doggone stressed and busy. But to have somebody hurting or just to have somebody needing the kind of therapies we give, I couldn't stay home and knit. It just couldn't be my lifestyle because it's so exciting. I mean, I feel like we're just on the brink of new information and new things that we can stop some suffering. If we can, that's what we're here to do, or I'm here to do anyway. My doctor that I'm working for is just turned 79 2 days ago. So he's my hero. I mean, he's still going 90 miles an hour and trying to help people that have cancer. And be it first stage or last stage, he makes it comfortable for them. If they are in the last stages, we don't ever say we cure them. But I have seen both sides, you know, being in nursing. You see the ones that go through the chemo and die a horrible death. I mean, it's something I never want to experience myself. So why would I want to watch someone else? So if there's anybody that would listen, I would like to get them in this direction. And I say cancer because I think a lot of the Agent Orange, even from what I'm hearing, that's the end of how a lot of them go. So how do we stop this? At least make them comfortable while they're going, because we're all terminal. We're all going to die. It doesn't matter your age, you're all going to die. But how bad is it going to be when you die? So that's one of my missions, and I don't know how I'm going to be able to. I need help. That's, I guess, one of the things maybe I'm here for, is say, I need help trying to figure out how to pass the word on and put a protocol together, if anybody will listen, for them to at least do minor things to make their quality of life good until the day they don't get up. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be the way I'd want to go. I want to just not get up in the morning. Mm-hmm. You know, go to sleep and that's it. Isn't that the way most of us want it? Or have a car accident, which I don't think I'm going to. I'd like to say I'm a good driver. It's the other guy I'm worried about.
Yeah. Are you involved in veterans activities at all?
You know, I got a little bit involved in Vegas, and I gave some talks on, for instance, to the blind veterans. I just have spoken, you know, to different organizations, just to make them aware, again, that there's another way. And through that, I have been able to help some veterans. In fact, I just recently had one that he is on the kidney transplant list, and I found out, I don't know how he found me, but people find me because they're supposed to, I think. And his kidneys were shutting down. He was supposed to get kidney dialysis. And he lived so doggone far away from the Veterans Hospital that they had just bought a place, retired, and had 20 acres, and they were just loving it. Now he's going to have to move back to the, you know, close into the town that he didn't really want to live. And I think he's about 120 miles away from the Veterans Hospital. And so I started him on a program, and his kidneys today are working. He's off the transplant list, and he is having a life again. He's actually off the couch. I mean, the poor guy will sleep 24/7 if he could. He knew he didn't want to, but he had to. So those are the kinds of things that I'm trying to do little by little. Mm-hmm. It does cost money. That's the problem. And a lot of folks don't have, because the insurance, it's really medicine by insurance now. It's not any other way. If the insurance company says it's okay that you can have a drug that could, you know, take you out of pain, supposedly. Or, you know, they don't know what it'll do, they'll pay for it anyway. But if it's some kind of alternative, they call it, I call it complementary, because you work two at the same time and just augment the therapies, I think you can make a better life, but the insurance companies won't let them. So the only way I can see our way out of this is having your own funds, put it into your own bank account, building interest like they do with your money, because a lot of times they deny anything you send in anyway. So it's like, would you please let me get treatment I think is going to work for me, mm-hmm. you know, and has been proven. It's not like this is an unproven mm-hmm. therapies now that we're doing. I mean, echinacea is a common household word now. When I first got into the trenches, as I call it, in 81, they thought you were some kind of witch doctor or something. And now they find, hey, that might even help not get this cold. Let's get that on board. Vitamin C, you know, mm-hmm. might even do some good. Zinc, take some zinc lozenges and sore throat might not be as severe. It might not take it away, but it might not be as severe. So I think the education part was the part I was after. Since I've arrived in Reno, which I just recently did, a couple of years ago now, it feels like recent, we've had to move once because the office I was in had mold, didn't realize it, and my office, of course, had to be it's like God just gives me these experiences so I can figure out how to fix them. I ended up with mold, and last April almost died of encephalitis and pancreatitis because it hit me so heavy. And mold is a real big issue swept under the rug here in the United States, because you try to get mold insurance on your house, you can't. You can have water damage, but you can't get mold insurance because they know it's so pervasive throughout. In fact, you live in Hawaii, you might as well just count it in. It's part of your terrain. Having that experience now, I've got on board in my brain what to do for that, which is another piece of the puzzle, I think. A lot of people are suffering from. So you're saying allergies. Most of us have, in fact, Mayo Clinic has just come out, we have fungal right here. We have to figure out how to control the fungal in the sinus area, and then it won't pervade the rest of the body. So a lot of our allergies are caused by that. And there are some cleanses and that kind of thing that I've researched and gathered as part of my toolbox. And it's not my idea. It's like, just like you're doing, you're gathering information. I've gathered information from various people, and anybody in this kind of job that I'm doing, I think, has that search engine, so to speak, trying to look for all the things that are going to be valuable, you know, for whatever the case might be. Thank God for the internet. I think that's why medicine is going to advance so fast. And nobody's, you know, if something comes up with an idea, it's not being hidden. Where before you could, you know, pretty well tuck it under the rug and nobody's going to know about this anymore. Because there wasn't a lot of communication, but the internet's going to be our savior in a way.
Did you ever, were you ever diagnosed with PTSD, or did you ever have problems like someone had?
No, I don't think I have had it because of my husband. We have been able to talk if something comes up, you know, of our experience there, etc. Talking about it has, I think, basically helped. We really haven't gone in, and we probably should, but I don't think we've stabilized long enough in one place without so much stress going on in our lives, besides having the children that were so ill. There wasn't a moment to even worry about that, you know, but functionally, you know, we were able to function as a couple, mm-hmm. and that's probably what saved us from that. If you go back to my assault by the, you know, mutiny on the ward, I could say I probably should work that one out, because it does still get an emotional part of me out. But in a way, it's incensed that I was accused of something that I shouldn't have been accused of. So I think that would be the only thing I probably should work out. But honestly, we haven't had time. And now my husband, it's kind of interesting, I'm feeling better. I don't feel like top of the heap, ready to go exercise every day and that kind of thing, although we have animals, and I have gotten back to my horses and stuff. And even though I'm 60, I have another friend who's almost 80, and she rounds horses up and she brands them and everything else. So I said, you know, if she can do that, I can do what I want to do too.
Uh-huh.
And we're milking goats now. We've got our own little goat factory going, and we've got chickens that lay eggs and stuff. And that fills my soul. I mean, that to me is a event. If you want to talk about getting back to my dream, making my heart sing. If I'm out in nature and I'm out with the animals, that takes away any pain that I've got emotionally. And they're my healers, so mm-hmm. to speak. So, and I, having the research bend in my brain to try to help what I'm trying to help, I don't have time to worry about mm-hmm. my emotions, and maybe I should stop for a minute and figure that out. I don't know. But I think I'm a pretty stable, caring, loving, functional part of society. My husband, on the other hand, I think he's gotten into it. And I don't think he realized it. In fact, as we speak this weekend, he's putting through a disability thing because he can't hold a job. And he has severe headaches. Now, he's got the headaches. And we just did an MRI and they didn't find anything. I said, no brains either? No, but he does have. He's an intelligent, brilliant man. I mean, they've said he's a genius, but the poor guy is dyslexic also. Mm-hmm. So it's been very, very difficult for him, although he does, as I said, writes, and he's done some emotional things. He's gotten through, he knows how to do hypnotherapy, and he does it beautifully. He has been trained in NLP, are you familiar with that, neuro-linguistic programming? And it does help, for instance, if there is a past experience someone had, he can actually bring them back to that day and say, somebody assaulted you, you know, swiped your purse. And from then on, you might have a phobia. It may not be related to that at all. Mm-hmm. But he can actually disconnect that phobia once he goes back, even 2 minutes before the purse was snatched, and have you look at the world from that moment perspective. And then put all the new sticky notes up, because you put a whole bunch of nasty sticky notes because of that mm-hmm. assault. So it's kind of a neat thing. But for him, he's been battling, and it's a gift he's got. He's been battling, try to get people to even want that kind of therapy. And he's done radio shows and that kind of thing. And I'm doing radio shows too. I've got two coming up. I think there's one this Thursday to just expose people again to homeopathy and the complementary. I don't want to say alternative, because that means you don't do the other one. Because I like looking at lab work, because it changes. If you do the right work, you actually change the way the body functions and the way the body can clear things, and all of a sudden cholesterol drops. My cholesterol used to run about 300. I've got it down to 189 without the drugs. And of course, they were at VA trying to push the drugs on me, and I see in our clinic cancer patients coming through, and one of their drugs, and they have it in the liver, is Lipitor. So you can't even get me near Lipitor. I see a pill and I want to run, because that stuff is dangerous, and it is a side effect. It says it right on it. And I'm seeing the aftermath of it. So the kind of work I'm doing is fascinating. It's saved my life, as far as I'm concerned. And now I am working on my husband. It's a little hard when you're your own husband's doctor. It really is. He'll not listen to me on diet. He'll not listen to me on a lot of the things that he needs to change. So it's his experience too. I think that's the other thing. I'm not going to take anything I know and shove it down anybody's throat. I want people to find a point at which they say, man, I need something different. What I'm doing doesn't work. So what is there? You know, can I educate two people, and maybe they can go out and educate two more, and then the world starts knowing, you know, there is another alternative, there is something else I can do to add to what I'm doing. You know, I still would like an MRI. I want a PET scan to see what the body's doing. I'd like to have a urine analysis if the bladder, kidneys, a problem. I was aerobacked back from Vietnam because of a kidney problem. So I was medevaced home. And my husband somehow got to accompany me. So that's how he got out, because he was supposedly leaving 10 days after I was leaving. And so we were able to work it out that he was able to be my medical assistant, or I don't know how they termed it.
Uh-huh.
but it was so screwy the way they were manipulating that you're out of there. So, and luckily my kidneys have done very well. They didn't do for a long time, but they did. They're fine now. You know, I still kiss the ground that I know what I know. And I'm hoping other people will listen.
What do you think was the best part of your here, there? Or just the whole experience of being here?
Yeah, it sounds crazy, but I thought I was so blessed. I mean, I did go see some other units because of our in and out, just when we left for R&R or coming up, where we had to come up through. I think we went through in a train, and I thought, oh my God, this is awful. It was so hot, so humid, it was almost, you couldn't breathe. And then we got up to the Central Highlands, where we were, and it was like, oh my gosh, it's cooler up here. We even had a winter. We had like 40 degrees, and we didn't have heaters. We didn't have, all we had is a flap on the window, so you could open the flap or close it, and then you had screens. And that was it. And of course we had, which was a laugh, they'd come through and do white glove inspection. And if you were lucky enough to have the helicopter not land before they inspected, you could have a white glove inspection. But as soon as the helicopter landed there, you'd swipe and find dust. Course. So, and the good experience was that, you know, we were officers, we were treated, I think, very well. I was kind of out of the party group. I never drank very much. If I drank, I got so sick that I just couldn't drink. So that wasn't one of my thrusts. I didn't smoke, so I wasn't in the in crowd at the officers' club. We'd go in and have a hamburger and go home. You know, that was... it wasn't a disappointment to me, but I felt like an outsider in a way because I wasn't a party animal. And I was married, and I had no interest in not being married. You know, there were some that were together that were married, but their spouses were back in the mainland. So it was all kinds of hanky-panky going on. It was kind of fun to sit in the, I think in the bleachers and watch all the crazy mash. I mean, when we watched MASH, it was like, did somebody actually take scripts from our lives in Vietnam? This is exactly what was going on. You know, it was kind of, when we first drove in, the commanding officer's hooch had a bra hanging in its, and he's supposedly a commanding officer. I thought, oh boy, what are we getting ourselves into? Uh-huh. So we kept pretty isolated in a way, and I think I was really naive, I still am, about a lot of the happenings in, you know, in the unit. I didn't even know how many people were actually stationed there. I think around 200, but I'm probably way off. And I don't know them all. Mm-hmm. You know, we just didn't have a lot of relationship because when you work 16 hours, there's not a lot of time to socialize. And you couldn't socialize with the enlisted. You know, you're an officer, you're not allowed to touch them, you know, stay away from them. So we really couldn't get too friendly, although one sergeant was just the most amazing guy. His name was Sergeant Cheryl. I didn't even know his first name. But he was just like my backbone on the ward. So that was a very peaceful time. We got, we always got like the best ward, you know, that at that time or that week or whenever they're doing their inspections, which I thought was idiotic. But, you know, to have people making sure that things were happening on the ward correctly is right. But to have a white glove inspection in the middle of a war zone when they have helicopters landing doesn't make too much sense to me, but that's the military, I suppose. Those poor people in Iraq wonder how they even keep their engines clean. You know, never mind keep their bodies together. Another Vietnam, as far as I'm concerned. So it was a good time. I'm glad I had the experience of being in Pleiku, because Pleiku was like a heaven sent. Even though we were bordered and, you know, harassed and everything, it was still better than that horrific heat that some of those poor folks on the exterior had to endure. I don't know how they did it. Although they did have air conditioners, most of it. I don't know if they had them in the hooches, because again, we were really isolated. We didn't get to go coerce with everybody, you know. And they didn't let us just jump on an airplane and go somewhere. You left when you went for your R&R, you left when you went for leave, and that was it. And you're, you know, stateside. Unless you got injured.
there a part that you think it was worse? Worst part of it? Didn't you like
the food? Yeah, it could be maybe the not knowing a lot of things. They would keep us in the loop. You know, we were never really informed of what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
The people, very honestly, didn't really want us there for the most part. There was a few, but they were so desperate for anything, you know, the Mamasans. So they'd be your friend anyway. You know, why not? They saw money, you know, hand out. I feel so bad about this one lady that had all her money stolen the last day she was there. I can't believe that would happen, nor was she smart to keep it. You know, we hadn't put it in the bank. A good thing that came out of it was that we put all our money in a bank. When we came home, we had actually purchased the car, completely bought it. You know, we've never done that again. But we had a brand new town country station wagon that we bought. And we had enough money saved up that we put a down payment on a home. And was able to own a home. So, you know, that was a plus, I thought, you know, for being there, because we got combat pay. My husband was really good with the money. We just pooled our money, and it just went into our fund, but it went home. It didn't stay there. We had not that much to spend our money on. I mean, we had a PX that was less than a 7-Eleven, and there wasn't a lot of need that we had, you know, because you had your own. You didn't have to pay for your quarters, and you didn't have to pay for your meals. Mm-hmm. Although we would willingly go pay at the Air Force just to have something to eat. You know, we didn't have to pay there. And that wasn't a big deal, because it was like, oh my gosh, we have somewhere we can spend some money.
Mm-hmm.
So there was nothing really to spend money on. So that was an advantage to us, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And will we do it again? I think I would. You know, I really think that what we did there for humanity was what we were there for. If I had to go and do what the poor guys in the trenches did, there was no way. I mean, to have your buddy that's sitting right next to you get blown to bits and his head rolled down a hill, as we've heard a lot of folks, I don't think we'd ever be the same. So post-traumatic stress, yeah, for that. The way we were treated, you know, there were some inequities, I thought. But for the most part, I think it depends on your connection with your Creator. You know, if you have a real strong belief that you are being cared for and watched over and you're doing what you're supposed to do on this planet, which I had. I'm not saying that protected me, but I am saying I had a faith that, you know, I was there and I was there for a reason. If I died, so be it, because this was what I was born to do. And I hope that, you know, some of those poor people in Iraq have that same strong belief system. And I don't care what religion people have, you know, being in the kind of, belief system I have, somebody should have some kind of faith. To have, there's nothing there after we leave, there's, you know, there's this big gap, there's nobody watching over us. I don't know. I don't think I could have survived it if I didn't have that belief system. And I did. And I've heard that from the POWs, too, where they said that they have that religion or that faith that kept them stable and able to keep going. So I thank God for that. And I also thank my husband, because, you know, he's been my other support system. And right now, you know, he's going through his struggles, so I'm going to be right at his side to hopefully pull him out of bed if I have to, and hopefully we'll find some answers for him. I wish he could get a job. It would be, although, geez, the poor guy's 62, he might be ready for his retirement. But I see people retire and then they die, so the idea of retiring doesn't seem to be in my consciousness. I've got too many things to do yet.
Was there anything we didn't talk about that you wanted to talk about?
Oh, probably, but it'll probably come back later, and there's forms here, right, to fill out and to expand on. My children, I will say my children are, and my grandchildren. I have both grandchildren, I believe, are damaged, again, from the chemical. And my husband and I both, you know, handing it down to them, I think, made it stronger on both. And we have modified immune system defaults, we could show, you know. But the VA doesn't really, I think it's probably money. You know, I would look at it as a research project, just to say this is what kinds of things that a dioxin can do to people. And it can create bad things. And can you overcome them? I think you can moderate them. I don't think you'll ever overcome them. And to be able to have, you know, just the mere fact of throwing your hormones off as a woman. And as a man, I think men are going through menopause, and there's going to be a big insurgence of that awareness soon. We're more aware of it now in our, you know, kind of therapies, but these poor guys are going through a lot of hell as well. I mean, how many people have dumped their wives and gone to other wives and more wives, and they're not finding their bliss, which is sad. You know, and what is bliss? For me, bliss is going out and feeding the animals and shoveling the manure and hugging my horse and milking the goat, you know, and that's my bliss. But what is everybody else's bliss? You know, are they doing their work that they're supposed to do here on the planet while they're here? Because it's pretty short. Mm-hmm. When you look at it, you know, at your age, and you think, oh, that 60 years old, that's a whole person. And now I look at it and I go, I got a lot of life yet. I got a lot of things I got to do yet. And I'm hoping people have that feeling. But I've also met people my age and they're saying, oh, I'm so old. It's like, wait a minute, you're not old. It's up here. You're up in your brain. So that's probably one of the statements I wanted to make. But my children I'm concerned about, my grandchildren I'm even more concerned about. The older one is 5, brilliant, just a brilliant kid. Thank God she doesn't have the dyslexia we have. In fact, she just won in her school Best Artist as a kindergartner. Wow. And she got a $50 gift certificate and some other awards, and it's like, whoa! Plus, she's got a photographic memory. She can read a book, and she knows what you read. So she's got a beautiful future, if her body will let her. She was also inability to thrive. She would eat. She's like anorexic. I mean, this is at birth. We're talking teeny little baby, not wanting to eat. She wouldn't eat pavlov, she wouldn't eat the applesauce, any texture she wouldn't eat. She would eat rice. I thought, what do you, did you get some of the Vietnam, you know, love for rice or what? Where my brother-in-law will never eat rice. He sees rice and it brings back really bad memories. He sees a fly and he goes nuts. And he was over there, that was interesting, at the same time that we were, I think we overlapped. My brother was also over there at the same time. And my poor sister was absolutely fanatically nuts anti-war. Uh-huh. In fact, I felt so bad because she was down in Washington in the parade, uh-huh, when they had that big parade, mm-hmm, and anti-war demonstrating. Mm-hmm. I thought, how can you do that? And, you know, I understand her now. It was very cool because we had the Vietnam, Women in Vietnam Memorial, and she came with us. This was really cool. And my brother's wife at the time, who knew nothing about Vietnam, and we all went down together. And when we did the march and everything else, the awareness was that she, I knew why she had protested. I couldn't understand it while I was over in Vietnam, but I understood, you know, she had her brother and her sister over there. And we were getting nowhere. It seemed like an endless circle of nowhere. And she was protesting the idea that she had possibly lose both of us. So I guess I could understand her viewpoint. And then she came and listened to us and kind of understood our viewpoint. So there was a big healing because of that moment, you know, in time. So that was good. But I think that was one thing that bothered us a lot. And then, of course, I have no problem when I came back. Everybody was saying they got spit on and that kind of thing. We never had any of that, so we lucked out. Everybody that had heard that I was in Vietnam as a nurse, and some of my nursing buddies and that kind of thing, wanted us to actually talk about it. Maybe that's why we had healing we had. Because I have slides that I used to show to the Nurses Association, that kind of thing. actually was president of the Holistic Nurses Association over in Hawaii for a few years and had them become aware of, you know, the situations, et cetera, too. Mm-hmm. And I guess gaining understanding causes you to heal as well on both sides. So that might be something. And I'm not at all, obviously, without words to tell people that, you know, this is something that happened. It's over, put it behind you, and then get out and do what we're supposed to do, is help humanity. And it still doesn't matter. One of my friends is not going to be in nursing anymore. She's trying to find something else. Mm-hmm. And I think about it, and it's like, okay, well, she needs to find her mission, whatever it is next. Mm-hmm. But at least she needs to do something, not just sit there for me. You know, I've been through this experience, and I can't get over it. You know, we're here for a purpose, and obviously some of the, even the folks that survived and lost legs and that kind of thing, I see that all the time at the VA. I feel like, wow, you know, I am so lucky, I'm not going to complain. And sometimes I should pursue some of my other ailments, but it's like, no, they need more than I do. I'll still go and, you know, be part of their getting big experiments if they want, but I sure would like to get some other awareness that there are some other things that they can do to have a quality of life. And I'm not saying I achieved the, you know, optimum life, but I'd like to be able to not work as hard as I have to work to gain a living, but I make a good living at what I do. And that's only because I know I'm doing the right path that I'm supposed to be doing. Never in my life would I ever thought I'd make as much money as I do an hour. And I can support my husband and I, and sometimes my kids when they're falling on their face, like my son just lost his job. And it just blows my mind that I can carry the whole ball as bad as I sometimes feel. Because there are waves of, and this is a bad time, my liver is kicking in again. So I don't think you're ever cured, but I think you can. So I don't have a final statement except thank you. I thank you for for doing this interview, and I hope that we gather a lot of data this weekend and get to see some old friends.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll end the interview.